Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 9th of October. We are, as you know, in our fall pledge drive. I want to tell you about an exciting thing that you can enter in just one moment. First, let me say that most of the hour, we'll be talking about geography with some fascinating guests. We'll talk with the author of How the States Got Their Shapes, and there's a whole lot of history behind that. And he's also the author of How the States Got Their Shapes, too, the people behind the borders. Some of the states that were designed but didn't make it into the Union, there are many of them. Those are fascinating stories. In the last part of the hour, we thought that we would give you a chance to talk about your favorite piece of Wisconsin geography. Where should we all go to feel uplifted? So that's coming up the first hour of our program. We do want to tell you that all pledges today only are entered in a drawing for a pair of tickets to the sold-out Prairie Home Companion Show at the Overture Center in Madison on January 26. This is a great way to start your new year. The winner will also get one night at a hotel and dinner, all in walking distance from the performance in downtown Madison. You don't have to pledge to enter, but we sure hope that you will. All sustainers are automatically entered. You can become a sustainer and you'll be entered in all of our drawings and sweepstakes. That said, here's how you can pledge. It's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And best of luck to you. Mark Stein is our guest, the first part of the show. He's a playwright, a screenwriter, and an author. His books include How the States Got Their Shapes and now How the States Got Their Shapes to the People Behind the Borderlines. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our time a little bit short, so feel free if you've always wondered why Oklahoma looks the way that it does, or Texas, or California, or Utah. Feel free to call in. Our number is 800-486-8655. Hello, Mark. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
So were you one of those youngsters who looked at the map that we all put together and said, what the heck is this all about?
It's exactly right. I was. I could actually pinpoint it for you. I was in seventh grade geography class.
Mrs. Really?
Roman's class. She always had a big map of the U.S. pulled down, a big map of the United States, of the state of Maryland, where I grew up. And a lot of times I gazed at those maps in lieu of listening to what she was teaching. and I do remember one time looking at Maryland and thinking, we're missing a half a rectangle in the eastern end. What is that? It turns out it's Delaware. And I thought, well, why do we have Delaware? You know, Maryland wouldn't be that big if it included Delaware. Do we really need Delaware? What's the deal with Delaware? And part two, where it really got kind of fueled further for me, this interest, was in college. I ended up at the University of Wisconsin. And would see this logo of the state, you know, up and down State Street in Madison on book covers or whatever. Then I saw a real map and realized, wait a minute, there's a whole peninsula of Wisconsin, coming off Wisconsin, that belongs to Michigan, doesn't even touch Michigan. How'd that happen? You know, and all those questions, along with things like you just mentioned, Oklahoma's weird panhandle, I thought, what is this thing? How did these lines get to be what they are?
Well, we're in Wisconsin, so why does Michigan have an upper peninsula that isn't attached to Michigan?
You know, the interesting thing about it is because of a dispute at the entirely other end of Michigan, down at its southern border, and in particular with Ohio. Ohio became a state before Michigan became a state, so there's a difference in how much power they had in Congress and so forth, legal standing. The original boundary was supposed to be a line from the very bottom of Lake Michigan due east till it hits Lake Erie. And what Ohio realized in 1803 when they were going for statehood was that that line would cut off their port where the Maumee River hits Lake Erie at Toledo. So they just adjusted it a little bit, put the line at a little angle to the north. And when Michigan comes along for statehood in the 1830s, you know, 30 years later, by now we've got the Erie Canal. We've got all kinds of canals being built. That's actually a very important hub, Toledo, if canals, if railroads hadn't supplanted them. And they disputed it. In fact, it was called the Toledo War. And the two states' militias were lined up
Oh my
and
goodness.
All ready to go. And at that point, the federal government intervened and said, whoa. Michigan, how about this? Let Ohio have Toledo. We'll give you this peninsula up here. Nobody lives in that area. What do we call it? Wisconsin, I think. Go ahead and take that. And long story short, Michigan said, we'll take the deal.
But what a dramatic story.
It was. And by the way, the postscript to it is that years later, Michigan disputed the boundary between the UP, the Upper Peninsula, and Wisconsin. It divided along certain rivers. They said that the surveyor used the wrong branch of the Montreal River and came to Wisconsin and said, we need to negotiate this. Wisconsin, I don't think they even gave him some cheese. They just ignored him. So they went to the Supreme Court. And in 1926, if I remember right, the Supreme Court said, you know what, this is way too late to be bringing this to us. This happened in 1841. That survey was made, and Wisconsin has had jurisdiction all along there. You've never contested it. Why now?
Fascinating.
Goes to Wisconsin.
Are a lot of the borders just natural boundaries, natural, you know, rivers and mountains and those kinds of things? Or
yeah, that's a great question, because I get it a lot. Rivers in particular, but also mountain crests, do form a number of the borders. But if you just kind of can vision the American map, you can see how, from, as you go from east to west, more and more straight lines begin mm-hmm. to prevail. There's two reasons for this. One is that railroads were developed. And once you have railroads, rivers are not, they're still very important for irrigation, for agriculture, but they're not so important for transportation, so that Congress could use straight lines where it behooved them to divide that way. One way that, and this is the other reason for using a straight line, is that particularly as we get into the western states and the Midwest, some of those rivers are really fickle, like the Mississippi River. They will change their course. So there is a part of downtown Omaha, Nebraska, that belongs to Iowa, and it's still part of Iowa, because the Missouri River changed its course during a flood and changed the boundary. But the Supreme Court has always ruled that when a river is a boundary and it changes course, the boundary does not. So particularly down the Mississippi between Illinois and Missouri, most of all, if you look at a map, you'll find all these little places and that are in Missouri, but they're actually, they look like Missouri, but they're actually Illinois, and vice versa. Rivers are risky boundaries, and a lot of disputes continue if you rely on the river.
What states, Mark, are most rectangular? There are several of them in the West that it almost looks like somebody just drew this little rectangle and said, well, that's it. They're mm-hmm. unusual because they don't have any of those little squiggles.
Yeah. And Colorado and Wyoming, I want to say they're perfect rectangles. Unfortunately, the world is round, so they're not so perfect because, of course, the lines going toward the north begin to converge. And one of the things I wondered as I started writing the book was, well, why are the lines for, let's say, Colorado, Wyoming, the two square rectangular states, why are they where they are, not 5 miles this way or that? There are a number of things that were set up in history, but I'll just pick it up from what I find the most interesting. All the way back when Stephen Douglas was trying to prevent civil war with what states will be free and what states won't, he proposed the creation of Kansas, and it would have been in his original proposal right along the top of Texas, which is 36 degrees 30 minutes. It's the line that was used in the Missouri Compromise. It's the line that is the southern border of virtually all of Missouri. But there was a big debate about, well, will it be free? Will it be slave? Douglas said, okay, look, I can solve this. We'll create Kansas and Nebraska. And he said that Kansas, well, he moved the southern border up one half of 1 degree. It created a gap. That gap today is the Oklahoma Panhandle. But here's how we get to the rectangles. He moved it to 37 degrees, and that became a baseline that over the next several decades, in the prairie states, you have Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota. Each of them have exactly 3 degrees of height.
Oh.
And just to the west, you get into the mountainous states, not as good for agriculture. Same baseline, 37 degrees. You have Colorado, Wyoming, Montana. Montana, of course, not a rectangle, but they are exactly 4 degrees of height. So you go from 37, 41, 45, 49, the 49th parallel. And six of the western states, including Colorado and Wyoming, have 7 degrees of width. They were really trying as best they could to make states equal. And equal doesn't always mean equal in size. It means equal in resources as best they could. All of that goes all the way back to Thomas Jefferson, mm-hmm. who had a proposal for how to create new states. And he created all these little rectangles that he proposed that would now go through Wisconsin and Illinois, Michigan, and so forth. But the Congress scrapped that. They didn't do that. But later Congresses kind of came back to that idea, that prototype. So you see a lot of those of rectangles, beginning with Iowa, by the way, 3.5 degrees of height. Huh. Not what it proposed, but it's what Congress gave it.
Huh. Let's take one call for you. Scott in La Crosse. Hi, Scott.
Hi there, Kathleen.
Hi.
Proud WPR member.
Thank you,
Scott.
Scott
from La Crosse here. Hey, I have a story I've always heard, and it sounds like you have the perfect person to answer whether this is true or false. I had heard that the way that West Virginia got its panhandle is that Mason and Dixon had been hired to run straight across between what's now Pennsylvania and Maryland and what was then, I guess, Pennsylvania and Virginia before West Virginia broke away. And they had heard, they got to, along their trek, they got to a point where they heard a rumor that there were hostile Indians up ahead. So they went straight north and they took the line with them. So they went up north, and then I guess they got to some place where they heard it was safe, probably around the Ohio River someplace, and then came back down. Is that a true story?
Some of that is not the best parts of it, but some of it is, Scott. They were surveying the line that is the boundary between Maryland and Pennsylvania, that straight line, and they did learn. Actually, they knew ahead of time that at a certain point their guides would not go any further, their Indian guides, because the tribes they would be encountering were hostile, and that's where they stopped. And then later, surveyors just continued their line. But they did not go north at the end of Pennsylvania. That line, the western boundary of Pennsylvania, is not part of the Mason-Dixon line. I could talk more about Mason-Dixon, but let me stay with what you're asking about. It's that weird little finger, if you will, of West Virginia that sticks up between Ohio and Pennsylvania. All this was part of a big negotiation right after the Revolution between Pennsylvania and Virginia. It also involved New York, but because all those boundaries had to be worked out as to just how far west Pennsylvania should go, given its colonial charter. Virginia's piece of this, and when I say Virginia, I mean also West Virginia, because it was still part of Virginia back then. Their big piece of this was the Ohio River. That, in the mountainous part of Virginia, today it's West Virginia, that was the most important avenue of commerce, the Ohio River to the Mississippi to the sea. And they had deeded land along the Ohio River. They did not want to give up the Ohio River. So they can't, and for Pennsylvania, their big piece of it was the point where the Monongahela and Allegheny Rivers meet to form the Ohio River. We call it Pittsburgh. So they came to an agreement which put the boundary such that Pittsburgh stayed in Pennsylvania, but Virginia kept its Ohio River frontage where it had deeded land. So that finger that sticks up between Pennsylvania and Ohio, that finger of what is now West Virginia, that left hand, that western part of that little finger, is the Ohio River. And that's the land that Virginia kept, even though it was just this little peninsula sticking up there. So nothing to do with Mason and Dixon, but it did have to do with Virginia and the importance of the Ohio River.
That's
all
wonderful.
Right. Thank you, Scott. Much. Thanks so much for the call. Mark, thank you. I think you ought to have people go on a road trip with you.
Well, the first book, reader I envisioned, if you will, was a family on a car trip, and I kept the chapters kind of short and state by state so that they could go, yeah, let's just pull out West Virginia here and see why this boundary is where it is.
So, thank you. Yeah. Thanks so much for being with us.
Sure. Thank you.
Mark Stein, playwright, screenwriter, author. His books include How the States Got Their Shapes and Now How the States Got Their Shapes to the People Behind the Borderlines. Just proof that an education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison can get you places. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Rhonda Fanning, and you are listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. We rely on listener contributions to pay for all of the programs that you enjoy here on the Ideas Network. This is our fall membership drive, and we're asking you to take some action by becoming a contributor to Wisconsin Public Radio. Every gift helps support the programs you rely on. Please make yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, the goal was 200 pledges, and we heard from 161 listeners. So thank you to all those who called in last hour. Now our goal is to get 35 pledges during this hour. Meeting this goal helps make sure Wisconsin Public Radio has the money we need to fund the programs that you rely on. And as an added incentive, today, any amount, any pledge entered is going to be entered into a drawing for a pair of tickets to a Prairie Home Companion when they do a show in Madison in January. Now is the time. Give it WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this is for today only. It's really a fun thing. The winner will also get one night at a hotel and dinner, and you can walk to the performance from downtown Madison. So it's a great, great hour to pledge and day to pledge. Listening to this Ideas Network is a lot like, you know, we talk about going out to, I do this all the time, you probably do too. You go out for coffee and you talk about the world and what's going on in our lives with a friend who is engaged and smart. It's comfortable, it's informative, it piques your curiosity, and somebody has to pay for it. So you make our daily cup of smart coffee on the Ideas Network possible with your financial support. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Pledge any amount today, and you'll be entered into that drawing for a pair of tickets to the sold-out performance of A Prairie Home Companion at the Overture Center in Madison in January. You can find out more details and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
One factor among WPR listeners is that they love to read. We started a book club, as you know. We have done Common Sense by Thomas Paine already. We're doing some of the Federalist Papers. Tomorrow we have Salman Rushdie with us, who's written one very important book. It's his memoir, the years that he had to go in hiding because of the fatwa that was issued against him. He will be with us, we're delighted to say, tomorrow during the program. And think about all of the book recommendations you get from Wisconsin Public Radio and how much it enriches your life. Think about it. Chapter a day, interviews with authors. You know that WPR listening leads to a never-ending book list. We both know that. Rhonda knows that very well. We got books. Oh, does Rhonda have books on her desk? You ought to see it, and maybe we should take a picture of it. I know.
I can put a picture on Facebook.
Okay, would you today?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that'd be great. Your donation right now makes that kind of endless joy and discovery really possible. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Some gifts are personal. Birthday, anniversary, housewarming presents. But other gifts are meant to be shared, like a sustaining membership in Wisconsin Public Radio. When you give $5 or $10 a month as a sustainer, your gift helps keep the more than 200,000 people who listen every day informed and entertained. Now that's a gift that keeps on giving. Become a sustainer today.
I'm Kathleen Dunn with Rhonda Fanning, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Perhaps $5 a month is a good amount for you. It's a common level for first-time donors, or maybe you have a little extra room in your budget and can give $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is really the right amount. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Radio is the perfect companion because it complements anything else you're doing. If you want to sit on the couch and just listen, you can, but you don't have to. Unlike TV or reading, you can drive while listening to the radio, get ready for work, clean the house, go for a run, whatever. Radio is great. It doesn't drain your energy. It adds to and enriches anything else that you're doing. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported radio. Your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 helps keep this all going.
And it takes only about 2 minutes of your time. All you have to do is tell us your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, how you'd like to pay. You may want to consider using your credit card because that saves time and postage and paper, and it puts your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, take those 2 minutes right now, please, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to WPR because we inform, entertain, and encourage discussion. We create a sense of community. You make Wisconsin a better place by listening and being a more informed person. You are a listener. Now we're asking you to become a member. Your donation of any amount makes you a member, and it makes Wisconsin a better place by making great radio available to everyone. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think for a moment about the programs that you love. How often do you listen and how long? Then think about your budget. What amount will make you feel good after you've pledged? Think about that amount and then pledge online, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552.
We're looking for another 25 pledges in the next, say, 32 minutes. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And don't forget, as that added bonus for your pledge of any amount, today only, you'll be entered in that drawing for a pair of tickets to the sold-out show, A Prairie Home Companion, when they come to Madison in January. All sustainers are automatically entered. Become a sustainer, and you'll be entered in all the drawings and sweepstakes. No contribution is necessary. You can also mail a postcard to WPR Prairie Home Drawing, 821 University Ave, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
And you forgot to say you get a hotel and you get food.
There you go. Food. I'm surprised I forgot to mention.
I surprised you did, too. So it should be a great thing. It's a terrific day to pledge. It's a great time to become a sustaining member of WPR by signing up for ongoing monthly installments from your bank account or your credit card. If you're a sustainer, you'll automatically be entered in today's drawing for Prairie Home Companion tickets, and you will be entered in all of our future sweepstakes and drawings. Become a sustainer now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. As David from Madison said this morning, giving to WPR is just the right thing to do. Your pledge is very important. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And thank you. We continue our interesting geography this hour of the program. The current issue of Mental Floss has a fascinating article on 12 proposed U.S. states that didn't make the cut. And we'll learn about some of them during the course of our conversation now and welcome your phone calls. Our guest this hour is a freelance writer and a contributor to mentalfloss.org. Asher Cantrell is with us. Asher, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here. These are fascinating stories, and why don't we start with Scott? I had no idea that not only was there a lost state, Scott, it was a lost state as recently as 1986? You're kidding me.
Yeah, that surprised me, too. I've lived in Tennessee my whole life, and I'd never even heard of it. They seceded from the Confederacy during the Civil War because they're up in the mountains of East Tennessee. They weren't, you know, they didn't own plantations for slaves. They didn't care about any of that stuff. And so they decided they would secede from the Confederacy, and they were the only other... There were no other counties around to secede with them, so it was just this tiny single county that became known as the Free and Independent State of Scott. And you can still see signs for it today. I found pictures online. I actually had to go and visit since it's not that far from where I live. I live in Nashville now. And They stayed an independent state, an enclave for the Union, until about 1986. And I don't know if they just forgot that they were an independent state, or if they were just that mad for that long.
So Go ahead.
They finally decided to rejoin Tennessee at that point, and there was actually a celebration held for when they rejoined, even though Tennessee never officially recognized their secession.
Hmm. So the country never really recognized Scott in any significant way. It was considered by this country to be a part of Tennessee, even though it wasn't?
Right. They considered themselves to be a free and independent state. Tennessee didn't consider them that, and the United States didn't consider them that. As far as the Union Army was concerned, it was a part of Tennessee and a part of the Confederacy.
Hmm. What about this state? This is also a fascinating story, and it concerns the Mormons in this country. The state that was named after a Book of Mormon, meaning honeybee.
Yes, there was a state. It's not quite where modern-day Utah is, although modern-day Utah was part of it. It was called Deseret, I think is how it's pronounced. I'm really not sure the exact pronunciation of it. And it was a state that Mormons set up to basically have their own government, to not have to worry about anybody else, any outsiders getting in their business, basically. And so they set up this huge chunk of the Southwest as their own state. And basically when they brought it to the U.S. government, they're like, that's a little much. And they cut them out of a slice of what was known as Utah Territory instead, which eventually became modern-day Utah.
Hmm. Here's another instance of parts of Wyoming, Montana, and South Dakota attempting also to secede and form their own state called Absaroka?
Absaroka.
What is it called?
It's pronounced Absaroka.
Absaroka.
I'm not sure how to like that, but it is. And, yeah, they tried to secede and form their own little state, and they even went so far as to making state license plates, and they held the first annual Absaroka beauty pageant. It was the one and only, so there was one and only Miss Absaroka, so she must have been very proud of herself. And after World War II started, everybody just kind of lost interest, and it went away.
Hmm. Well, some of those, the sash that she wore at the beauty pageant is probably very valuable right now, huh?
That's
if anybody could find it. We spent some time earlier in this hour talking about the Upper Peninsula. There's a place called Delmarva. Their attempt at self-government are persistent. What's that story?
Delmarva is a peninsula off the coast of Maryland, and the entire state of Delaware is on it. It's, you know, a very tiny state, of course. And but other parts of the peninsula belong to Maryland and Virginia, hence Delmarva. And there's been an attempt on and off for, geez, decades now, probably centuries, to break off and have their own state, and various names have come up for it, but it's usually just Delmarva. Other times people have called for Delaware to just absorb the other two states' areas and make the whole peninsula just be Delaware. But it's just never really gotten anywhere. You know, when you've got three different states to deal with, it's unlikely to ever see the light of day. But, you know, since the Marylanders and Virginians out there are separate from the rest of their state, I imagine they feel a little lonely.
There have been multiple attempts, you write, to create a state of Lincoln.
Yeah, there's been two separate states that were known as Lincoln, and one of them was in Texas. There have been, as part of the agreement to allow Texas to join the United States, they were allowed to split up into four states, is what I read, although somebody emailed me and told me it was actually five states. The source I included with the article said four. I'm not sure which is right. And so at various points in time, there have been all kinds of different proposals to split it up because, you know, it's kind of a large state and each geographic region of Texas is a little bit different. But I think Texans are probably too proud to ever do that. At one point, one of the split off states was going to be Jefferson, and then there was going to be another one called Lincoln. And of course, people still bring it up every time because Texans love to talk about seceding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never really happened, but the other Lincoln got a little bit closer to happening. It was in the Northwest, I think. And it was by a little closer to happening. I mean, it didn't really get all that close at all, but a little closer as in it made it out of talks then.
Hmm.
Versus Texas, which never even made it out of somebody saying, "Hey, let's split this up," and everybody said no.
Asher, do you know of any states right now, any little movements that we don't know about where people are trying to form their own states now in 2012?
Oh, sure. You know, all these various states, like the state of Superior, which is the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, Delmarva, Eastern Washington, and the Panhandle of Idaho have all had proposals recently. One of the most popular is part of Northern California, Oregon, Washington State, and a portion of Canada, actually, that want to split off, or maybe it's Northern Oregon, not Northern California, but they want to split off and form their own country called Cascadia.
Oh, it's a nice name.
I believe they have said that they would accept statehood as well. But in every case, it's a very, very small movement. I think most people are probably pretty happy with the states they're in right now.
Yeah. Asher, thanks so much for being with us. Asher Cantrell is a freelance writer and contributor to Mental Floss magazine as part of our little geography edification this hour. We are talking about the states, how they got their shapes, and Asher filling us in on the states that wanted to be and didn't quite make it. The last part of the show we're going to reserve for you, and I'd like for you to think for a moment about Wisconsin, the beautiful state in which most of us live, although there are listeners beyond, so call wherever you are, about your favorite little piece of land or river or whatever in the state of Wisconsin. We'll just open up the phone lines for you. That'll be fun, huh? I'm Kathleen Dunn with Rhonda Fanning, and this is also our Wisconsin Public Radio fall membership drive. More than ever, you rely on Wisconsin Public Radio and the Ideas Network for intelligent discussions. And more than ever, we rely on the money that you give to keep that talk on the air. Your gift today of $60 or $120 or any amount helps fund the important discussions that you count on. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and help pay for the programs you depend on. We're looking for another 17 pledges in the next 20 minutes or so. Make yours now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Every day, the Ideas Network connects you with experts. How many times can you just pick up the phone and talk to the editor of a magazine or a politician, the author of a book? The Ideas Network brings these experts right to you. And to help make it possible, please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And today and today only, pledge any amount and you'll be entered into a drawing for a pair of tickets to that sold-out show, The Performance of a Prairie Home Companion, at the Overture Center in Madison in January. Find out more details and make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we just want to remind you, it's not only Prairie Home Companion, it's also a hotel and dinner, and it's all within walking distance. So it's a terrific thing. Your pledge of support is our bread and butter. It sustains us, and it keeps us on the air, really. You turn on your radio every day, and you can enjoy great programs. And it's not possible without your help. Donate right now WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I listen and contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio, and I am an avid fan because Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network programming feeds my head, and the classical music feeds my soul. Thanks, Wisconsin Public Radio, for informing me and enriching my life.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Rhonda Fanning asking for you to support the WPR programs that you count on. And we thank you in advance for your gift of $50, $100, $500, whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Families often tell us how WPR brings them closer together. Children and parents can listen together before school, on the weekends, using WPR as a jumping-off point for conversations, in the car, around the dinner table. Spouses often get together at the end of the day to discuss the stories they've heard. Listening to WPR can be a point of connection between you and your loved ones. Your support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 keeps those connections going.
You may consider becoming a sustainer. You decide on a monthly amount to be charged to your bank account or credit card, and you set it up to be ongoing. It's a powerful way of donating because it provides reliable funding for WPR, and it's also convenient and affordable for you. Choose a monthly amount, say $10, $20. Become a sustainer right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And when you become a sustainer, you'll automatically be entered in all of our station-wide drawings and sweepstakes.
Maybe giving a dollar a day is the right amount for you, for your Wisconsin Public Radio listening. When you think about it, a dollar a day is a great value. It comes out to about $30 a month, which you can set up as a monthly transfer from your bank account or credit card installments. Any way you do it, we'll make it convenient for you. So please pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you call, all we need is your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay it. You can save time and money and use a credit card if you'd like and can, or better yet, start automatic sustaining donations from your bank account. You choose how to give, then you do it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're looking for an additional 15 pledges in the next 15 minutes, so we can do that. It's a very attainable goal, a pledge a minute. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And as that added bonus for your pledge of any amount, today only, you'll be entered in a drawing for a pair of tickets to a Prairie Home Companion when they do a show in Madison this coming January.
And you may just get those tickets and the hotel and the dinner. You may just do that, but you got to pledge.
And speaking of great places in Wisconsin, the Overture Center is, you know, a terrific thing that we have in Wisconsin.
It is. It's beautiful.
What is your favorite? Are you
mine is, I can't tell you exactly where it is. It's this little place that's south of Cable, Wisconsin, and it's a little part of the river where... Oh, I can't believe how beautiful it is. It's like this little magical kingdom where the water is kind of bluish and there are all these little islands. It's just, it's on another planet. I go there and I can't believe it exists. Somebody will know exactly where it is. I haven't been there for a few years, but it is absolutely beautiful.
Sounds beautiful.
It is beautiful. So pledge. Okay?
WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you, Rhonda. And we're continuing our geography with your favorite places in the state of Wisconsin. What are the little treasures that you want to let everybody know about? Not too many people, but everybody listening, so that they can see it at some point, not on the same day. We're opening phone lines. The number is 800-486-8655. So you complete our geography hour. Please call. We'd love to hear from you. And then we'll go visit all these spots. It's going to be fun. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lines are open for you now. What are your favorite spots in the state of Wisconsin? We'd love to hear from you. 800-486-8655. One of the most interesting places in the state of Wisconsin next Wednesday, October 17, will be at the Pabst Theater Cudahy Pub. From 6 a.m. until 11 a.m., Joy Cardine and I will be broadcasting our shows there live. You're invited to arrive anytime and stay as long as you would like. We will be taking listener calls from around the state. And what are we talking about? Of course, politics. It's a presidential election year, state Senate race. We'll be looking not only at those races, but also other important races throughout the country. We love politics on this show, and we hope that you'll join us, all of you who love politics as well. It's a free event. You don't have to RSVP, but we want to know. I think we're having donuts. Are we having donuts, Rhonda? We are. We're going to have donuts and coffee. So we need to know how much of that to get. Joy Cardine will be there from 6 to 9. I'm there from 9 to 11. Learn more and register at WPR.org/Milwaukee. And before we go to phone calls, you mentioned the Overture Center. You're a big beauty and nature kind of person, too. There must be other spots that you love in the state, Rhonda.
This summer, I got the opportunity to go a few times. I have a friend who lives on the Wisconsin River over by Spring Green. So
beautiful.
Up and down the river, the sandbars, stopping along the way. It's a very pretty part of the state. So yeah. I would say that's my current favorite.
Yeah, it is gorgeous. Let's go to Dave in Mazamini for our first caller. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you. I've been home quite a while, and I'm playing today. So I just preface by saying I've got my favorite place. I'm very quick. Garrison Keillor, you've mentioned the show in Madison. He once did a hilarious spoof on how North and South Dakota wanted to become one state. So that's something to keep in mind. Another is something about the state of Lincoln, and I'm getting to Wisconsin, is that very interesting for the history buffs out there. I know there's a lot on WPR. The state of Nevada and West Virginia were rushed through into statehood right before the 1864 election so that Lincoln would be reelected and not lose to radical Republicans. But my favorite place is Wisconsin, is the fact that Iowa used to be a part of the Wisconsin Territory. And so the first capital of Wisconsin was really, I believe, if I have this right, Burlington, Iowa. It's a beautiful area down by the Mississippi, down by the Des Moines River. And whenever I stand on top of, and here's my favorite place in Wisconsin, the tower at Blue Mountain State Park, I can see the Wisconsin River in the background. And I think of how Iowa and Wisconsin used to be one in the same. And I won't even mention the honeybee war between Iowa and Missouri and that issue with the boundary. So thanks very much.
Oh, Dave, thank you for listening. You're a great caller. Just think of all you gave us in 2 minutes. Less than that, a minute and 25.
Good job.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call. Indeed, the western part of the state is just not to be missed. Julia in Harrison. Hi, Julia.
Hi there. I'm so excited to be on.
Good.
My favorite place in Wisconsin is the Van Vliet Hemlocks. It's a stand of old-growth forest up in Presque Isle, and it's one of the few areas in the state that still has the old-growth forest. I think it's 0.1% of the forests in Wisconsin are still old-growth, so it's beautiful up there.
I have never been there. It does sound beautiful.
It's exquisite. It's been state-owned, I think, since the state was chartered, I believe. And they've only recently opened up or founded a trail system, but it is exquisite. And it's one of my favorite places in the entire state, if not the world.
If not the world.
Yes, I love Wisconsin.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you too.
Thank you. We have lines open. Please use it. These are great calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. And as we round up our geography hour, we're asking for you to give us your favorite places in the state of Wisconsin. We've had two terrific suggestions, so let's have a few more. We're also in a pledge drive, which I think you may know. And we're doing all right this hour. We need three more calls to reach our goal. And you can pledge while you're thinking about our wonderful state. It's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. There may be bodies of water. I love bodies of water. I say almost any place on Lake Michigan in the state of Wisconsin is not to be beat, because where would we be without this wonderful resource, this beautiful resource, which is Lake Michigan, plus all of the lakes. It's great. 800-486-8655 is the number. And let's go to Sarah next in Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Well, my place is not anywhere that, you know, is hidden, but I love Wisconsin so much. It's so beautiful, but my sentimental favorite has to be the neighborhood where my mom grew up in Lake Geneva. And also, in the last few years, we love to go to this apple orchard south of Lake Geneva called Hafe's Orchard, and it just has the most incredible varieties of apples, and it's in the, you know, it's in the country amidst beautiful oak trees and maple trees, and we just love to go there.
What's the name of it?
It's called Hafe, H-A-F.
Okay. I need to go there.
It's a really nice place to go in the fall.
Yeah, that's where my great-grandfather is buried and great-grandmother, and I go there about once a year just to sit at their graves, actually.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's what we do, too.
All right, well, I'll go to the apples the next time, too, following it. Thank you. Let's go to Bill in Milwaukee. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Kathy. My favorite place, and you can get there without a car, is Whitnall Park in southern Milwaukee County.
Gorgeous.
You can get there on a bus, and if you put your bike on the bus, you can ride your bike into the park. It's a delightful bike riding park. It's big, it's long, with sloping hills and trees and springs and lagoons. It's a beautiful place, especially this time of year.
It is. Thank you. Great suggestion. Thanks, Bill. Richard in Park River, Michigan. Hi.
Hello. Thank you. A long, long time ago, I worked in Green Bay, Reimer Sausage Factory. 64, was it? The Packers won the first Super Bowl.
Right.
And been a fan since. And also, I lived in the southernmost private house in the Upper Peninsula, which almost makes me a Wisconsinite.
Huh, that's great.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. And one more. Let's go to Steele in Ellsworth. Hi, Steele.
Hi, it's Steely.
Oh, Steely. Sorry.
My favorite place in Wisconsin is the town of or city of Alma. It's right on the river. It's a great place to go because they have a funky little old hotel that you can stay in for practically nothing. There are wonderful restaurants on the main street and funky little places. And you can watch the tugboats and the barges on the river. And it's just a beautiful little place.
Oh, it sounds like it, Steely. Thank you. Thanks for your call. We should do a whole show on this. We will down the road. We'll just get all kinds of suggestions. And then we can put them all together in a little book of some kind, a little pamphlet. That would be fun. Thanks, everybody. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Rhonda Fanning, and we are asking you to think about Wisconsin and a huge part of Wisconsin for many of us, the Wisconsin Public Radio Ideas Network. We have enlightening and informative discussions every day, day after day, and we're here right now to remind you that WPR relies on you to keep programs like this one on the air. It's our fall membership drive. A gift of any amount will make a big difference in our ability to pay for these programs. WPR.org, the place to go, or 888-202-2552.
That last segment was a lot of fun. I learned so much from
Wasn't that fun? I know.
I'm going to have to check out the river town of Elmer. I'm going to go see the old growth forest in Wisconsin, the apple orchards. I love when we get to connect with our listeners like this. So keep those connections coming. Your pledge right now helps keep this program and so many more on Wisconsin Public Radio going strong. Make your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember, everyone who pledges today and today only will be entered in a drawing for a pair of tickets to see the sold-out performance of A Prairie Home Companion in Madison this coming January. You could be that lucky winner when you make any pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And remember, you don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, and telephone number to WPR Prairie Home Drawing, 821 University Ave, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Enter by sending us a postcard or making your pledge now at WPR.org.
That's a great thing. That's fun to go to something that you wouldn't normally be able to go to because it was sold out. You expect all kinds kinds of things from us now because we are in the modern age. So we've got this online streaming and podcasts and a useful website, and we hope that we meet your expectations. They're not free. They require investments in technology and engineering. Your donation right now helps keep us relevant in this world. Make your pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I listen because the content is so good. I listen to both the Ideas Network and the music station. And I think it's because there's so much integrity in Wisconsin Public Radio. I know that I'm going to get the facts, and they're not going to be opinionated unless they announce that they're opinionated. Just a wonderful resource in our state. This summer, we've been traveling across the country out west, and I've really missed Wisconsin Public Radio. And there are lots of places in our country that are pretty dead in terms of radio reception, but even when I can get it on my computer, I want Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Lorraine Henning from Eau Claire, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for dependable media.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, today and today only is your chance to enter that drawing for the sold-out show of A Prairie Home Companion coming to Madison in January. So please make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks to everyone who has pledged already this hour.
Yes, thank you so much. It is true that we are a treasure, so I know you remember that. Please pledge.